Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Caroline, Willie, and D-Mates coming your way here on this Tuesday. Caroline back with us tomorrow. Hey, make sure that you come play golf with us. This is in the coming weeks. 102.5 The Game, and do some good at the same time while you play in the 615 Open. That's the 615 Open, June 20th at Hermitage. We've been doing this the last couple years, had a great time. Come golf with celebrities on a beautiful course with all the proceeds going to Souls for Souls, who helps local kids in need. This is going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait to see you there. More info now at 615open.com. That's 615open.com. For all you golfers out there, Hermitage is a beautiful course. Hopefully, it won't be put on my team or D-Mace's team because, well, that's if you want to win. If you want to have fun, no, we'll gladly join you.
Yeah.
We'll gladly join you. But if you're looking to win, you're looking for a ringer. Maybe good for a couple shots over the round.
So you mean to tell me
a couple of good shots
when you guys turn the nine, you get a couple sandwiches and enjoy the nice ride the rest of the way, right?
Pretty much, pretty much, and maybe a good drive or a putt here and there if on a good day.
Okay. You got some good shoes to go with it? Everybody likes to style their golf
shoes. Well, you remember the whole fiasco with
the
shoes.
Willie.
I got just shamed into buying new shoes at the clubhouse.
Yeah,
I believe it was 2 years ago. Those are still holding up pretty well because I don't play a lot, so they're still in good shape.
Wait, you had to buy some at the Hermitage?
Well, because, yes, they took one look at my shoes. D-May said, you cannot wear those out there. I had duct taped the toe.
Yeah,
because the sole was starting to come off,
ripped open. Yeah,
like Souls for Souls would not have taken those shoes. Honestly, they would have said, you know what, nobody can wear these.
I could see if Willie was a college student, like just making ends meet, and had to pay for his tuition and everything else. And hey, listen, I like the golf, but I can't, you know, afford to get some new shoes. And I just tape these. They're good. I can see if that was indeed the case for Willie. Then, okay, great, Willie. More power to you. Keep taping them up. I can understand that. I've been a college student. But he's a grown man. That's the voice for the Nashville Predators, the television voice for the Nashville Predators. He's a co-host to a radio station, a damn good radio station. And he can't go buy my extra pair of shoes.
I thought presentation was everything.
No, if you'd have saw those shoes, no.
Oh,
it wasn't the presentation.
It was bad.
Yeah, it was bad. We had to shame him into getting a new pair of shoes.
They said the pro shop is right over there. We're going to a commercial break. I want you to go in there right now and get some shoes.
Yeah, he had to.
Yeah, they hooked me up. That was good. All right, now, let's talk wide receivers here, D-Mace. In the first hour, we introduced this topic. On The Athletic, they have graded all of the wide receiving cores for all the teams in the AFC. We're going to focus in on the AFC South. But the findings, in a nutshell, for those that didn't hear the first hour, is that Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins scored pretty well last year on passes that they actually caught. But, of course, the name of the game isn't just the passes you catch. It's how efficient are you based on the number of times that they throw the ball to you. So, they ranked 13th in the case of Calvin Ridley for the Jaguars last year. DeAndre Hopkins 22nd in his first year with the Titans on something called EPA per reception. There were 56 receivers that had 75 or more targets. Ridley was 13th. Hopkins 22nd. That's the good news. The bad news is because there were so many incompletions on passes that were thrown to those guys, they ranked towards the bottom, in the bottom 10 or so, in actual reception percentage, and their numbers were only a little bit better in percentage of passes caught that were catchable, right? If I'm just throwing the ball away and I throw it into the band,
that's not catchable.
That's not catchable, so mm-hmm. that doesn't count against the receiver. Tyler Boyd was the reverse. He caught a very high percentage of the passes thrown his way, but he didn't get a lot happen, a lot of good things happening efficiency-wise on the passes he caught. We talked about yards per catch being down a little bit. So that's the book on the three receivers. But the interesting thing, of course, is all three of these guys played on three different teams.
Yes.
Only DeAndre Hopkins got to play some games with the quarterback that's going to be throwing him the ball this year. So what do we make of that? What's the biggest takeaway that you get from those numbers?
I would tend to guess that, you know, I'm looking at this, and at the end of the day, of your catchable balls, what is your percentage of catches on catchable balls, and where do you rank? Because there are a lot of other things that goes into each one of these categories: EPA per target, EPA per reception, catchability, catchable percentage, and then reception percentages. I'm sure there are different things that goes right along.
These are just the ones they drilled down on. EPA, by the way, expected points added per target. It's a catch-all category. Mm-hmm. What is happening when the ball is thrown to you? What good things are happening? Yeah. How do we rank
you? Are you catching it? You're getting
first downs. Everything that goes into it, but that's
touchdowns. Yeah. You know,
are you moving the chains?
Are you moving the chains? Yeah. And it just seems like guys that are 75 or more targets, Tyler Boyd ranks higher than Ridley and Hopkins. Now, we understand that those two guys got more targets than Tyler Boyd. And then you look at it, there was only one guy that played with their quarterback for majority of the season. That was Calvin Ridley. We understand what happened with Tyler Boyd, his quarterback. He ended up going down. We know what happened here. Starting quarterback ends up going down. Then the backup comes in, and he ends up going down as well. Then the starter gets back in the game. So there are a lot of variables in when compiling all these numbers. But I just look at the percentage. What's your reception percentage? And theirs is low.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing for me, you know, is that Ridley and D-Hop ranked lower than I even realized at catch percentage. It's low.
And you wonder, can Brian Callahan, with his offense, get these numbers up? Because you look at Tyler Boyd coming from that same offense, his numbers are higher across the board. His numbers are higher than Calvin Ridley and D-Hop across the board when you're talking about, you know, these numbers and these categories. So there has to be something different within that system that they ran that causes Tyler Boyd's numbers to be a little bit higher than Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins, who come from respective different, they were playing in different offenses. Now you put them in this Brian Callahan offense, which, you know, they were running last year in Cincinnati. Will their numbers go up?
Yes. With a new, there's a lot of variables, right? You got a new quarterback in the case of Ridley. Mm-hmm. You got a new coach. You got a new offensive coordinator. So can you get more out of the talent? That's the goal for sure. The other thing that we got out of the Titans before we look at the other teams in the division is that Nick Westbrook-Ikhine actually had a very good year in terms of EPA per target. He ranked fifth out of 79 receivers that got the ball thrown to them between 40 and 74 times for the season. So these are the guys that don't get the ball thrown to them as much, but he did well. His numbers across the board, rankings were fifth, 12th, 22nd, and 12th in the categories. And fifth is a great number there in the overall efficiency number, EPA per target. I did not realize with my eye test that he would have scored that high. But it just shows you that he's found a way to fit in. Now, how does he fit in with the new coach, the new coordinator, et cetera?
That means he's found a role within the offense that he was in last year. They were probably asking him to do specific things. And not asking him to do anything that was outside of that. So we're going to put you in situations where you are more susceptible to achieving or for that to work out in your favor than not. Will it be the same for Nick Westbrook-Ikhine in this new offense? How does Treylon Burks fit into that? Will he, will there be, you know, targets taken away from the top three guys, and even Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, if indeed Treylon Burks comes on. So there are still numbers that can affect moving forward. But I would love to see these numbers next year based upon,
because everybody will, in theory, have the same set of circumstances.
Exactly.
Same coach,
all three, all four of them, yes. And then five if you throw Treylon Burks in there.
Right. And Treylon Burks, if you're wondering, did not get the ball thrown to him enough to get ratings, right? Mm-hmm. You had to almost throw his numbers out. He only had 30 targets last year, so they didn't even cover him. He just gets a mention, a footnote at the bottom of the thing saying, will Treylon Burks ever produce? That's how it ends with him. So he's a complete unknown. So looking at the others, this is an interesting one for me, Jacksonville. Christian Kirk last year, very good ratings as far as catching the catchable balls, 87.7%, which ranked 10th. But not great rankings as far as the EPA per target or the EPA per reception. Not bad, but not great. And then you bring in Gabe Davis to replace Calvin Ridley. So what do you think of that tandem?
On paper, based upon these numbers, they didn't get better by adding Gabe Davis.
I think that's a good question, is did they get better shuffling these guys around, letting Ridley go, and then bringing in Gabe Davis?
Yeah, I don't think they gotten better. You know, and Gabe Davis dealt with his injuries too last year. But it just seems like based upon these numbers, this criteria, they didn't get better as a receiving core. Actually, they regressed.
Right. And a lot of it will depend on Brian Thomas, their first-round pick.
Out of LSU.
Does he help them? Mm-hmm. That's what they're counting on.
And then, you know, you look at a Christian Kirk who didn't finish the season. He got hurt and missed a chunk of the season toward the end. So would his numbers, even though his numbers are good, they're really good, how would his numbers have been? What would his numbers have been had he finished out the whole season? These are, to me, I look at these numbers and it's reliability. How reliable you are catching at catching the football. And you look at a Christian Kirk, he doesn't have the household name. He's not flashy, but he gets the job done based upon these numbers. He goes out there and he gets the job done. But bringing in Gabe Davis, it doesn't, based upon this, upgrade your receiving core. Actually, you regress as a receiving core.
And Davis is a unique guy because, as they note here in the article for The Athletic, he comes to Jacksonville as the definition of all or nothing. Mm-hmm. His reception percentage has never been higher than 56%. But on the passes he catches, he makes big plays.
Yes.
Right? He catches the ball down the field. 16.7 yards per reception is good, but there's a lot of passes that do not connect with Davis. But that was with the Bills.
Yeah.
What is it going to be with the Jaguars?
And the Bills seem like they probably used him as more of a down-the-field guy. Not to say that Stephon Diggs couldn't get down the field, because he could, but I think Gabe Davis, because of his height, his build, he was more, and his speed, he was more of the downfield guy than anything. And when you're just labeled as the stretch-the-field guy, then your reception percentage is going to be a little bit lower, as opposed of a Stephon Diggs or somebody else that gets a lot of short passes, catchable balls, but then he gets the deep ones, but more of his catches are underneath. So the numbers will be skewed a little bit based upon the player and what they're asking him to do.
Plenty of question marks for both the teams we've covered. When we come back, we'll hit on the other two teams in the division, the Colts and, of course, the Texans, now with Stephon Diggs in the mix with an already pretty potent passing attack that they had last year. What do those numbers look like? And our good buddy Robert Woods, the former Titan, will tell you what his numbers were last year. So we've got more coming here on the show, talking wide receivers. A little later in the hour, we'll talk some hockey, get you up to date on what's happening there, and a Pierre LeBrun, would I call it a rumor, would I call it speculation, but the situation that Marty Natchez is in Carolina, who is in a shakeup. The GM is gone. What are they going to do? They've got a guy in Marty Natchez who is an intriguing player. We'll tell you about, and LeBrun thinks that the Predators might have some interest in him in a trade situation. We'll tell you about that a little bit later. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5 The Game.
A good one.
Nick Frazier is on fire with the old school 80s today. Just as fine
as she can be. Come on, Nick, I see you.
Her body measurements are perfect in every dimension. She's got a figure
Could you pull off a karaoke of the song, Nick?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I could not.
Beautiful sight to see. I get so excited. Beautiful anatomy.
Oh, yes. Nick hit the high note a little bit, too.
I'll be in the background.
Yes, backup singer. I could be a good backup singer, no microphone. That would be just, I'll sing it. Just don't have me coming in there too hot.
You got it.
If I get off key,
we can do a voiceover for you.
I've got a range of notes that I could hit and get by, but I gotta know. You gotta work with me on the song. That one's a little high note. I don't know.
We'll treat you like Milli Vanilli. Just turn his mic off.
That's ideal.
We'll pump some music in there like he's singing. Okay.
The dance moves. Milli Vanilli did have the dance.
Oh, they had the dance moves.
I don't know if I've got those. So that's a problem.
Just believe in yourself, Willie. You got it.
Okay, I got it. Yeah.
There you go.
Someday this will happen.
Oh, it'll happen. Trust me, it'll happen.
All right, let's get to the wide receiver rooms of the Jaguars and the Texans. Those are the teams that we did not get to. We just broke down the Jags and the Titans in the last segment here. Unique situation with the Colts in that they're not returning anybody with depth. They have the two guys that they had targeted 70-plus times, Michael Pittman, Josh Downs. Downs, I think, was a rookie last year. Is that right?
Yes.
They graded well in the receiving or reception percentage. Didn't do super well with the efficiency. Of course, the caveat is it was Gardner Minshew that was quarterbacking. They also had Alec Pierce, a secondary receiver. So here is the lowdown from the article. Hanging on to Michael Pittman Jr. undoubtedly stood up as a top priority for the Colts. They re-signed him. Finding Pittman some cohesion with Anthony Richardson after a small sample size will be next on the priority list. He's been a number one wideout since his second season in 2021, and now he's being paid like one. The hope has to be for his EPA to increase, given his volume of touches and targets. And he only ranked 44th in EPA per target, 51st in EPA per reception. So he's catching a pretty high percentage of passes thrown his way, but not getting a ton. And I've always noticed that about him. He's a big, strong guy, not a ton of downfield stuff. But will that be better with Richardson in year two healthy? Yeah.
It may be. You know, as he gets more familiar with Anthony Richardson and as Anthony Richardson gets more familiar with him, those numbers can go up because – these are good numbers if you're looking at Michael Pittman Jr. You just hope that as his targets continue to go up, with the with he and Anthony Richardson building that rapport, you just hope these numbers go up. Josh Downs, second-year player, you do hope that his numbers goes up as well. Alec Pierce, his numbers are pretty good. But he's a guy that you only targeted it between 40 and 74 times. So will his numbers change as you start to target him more? But it seems like they have a good baseline when you're talking about their top three receivers. There's a lot to work with here. And I know they're looking at it as listen, we got a really good group of receivers here. But will one of these receivers turn out to be can Michael Pittman Jr. numbers go up when you're talking about the EPA target and EPA receptions? That's what needs to go up. That number need to come down as far as where he ranks, because he's ranked toward the bottom half right now. As far as EPA at target, he's 44th, and EPA receptions, he's 51st.
So you have a running theme, I think, with the Jaguars, the Colts, and the Titans, in that they all have some unknowns because Anthony Richardson was hurt for most of the year last year. You're still getting a feel for Will Levis in Nashville. You've got Trevor Lawrence, but then you have Ridley going from the Jags to the Titans and being replaced
by Gabe Davis
and a first round draft pick. So it's you can't really know everything. Here's the one about the Texans. Great question asked, because if you look, Nico Collins, Tank Dell, and Noah Brown, who was a secondary guy, he was in the category of 40 to 74 targets. All three of those guys had off-the-charts efficiency in EPA. Nico Collins had great numbers across the board. As we know, Collins and Dell both had injury issues. So the question that they're asking in this article is, do the Texans or did the Texans really need to go out and get Stephon Diggs? Because as we mentioned a lot at the time of the trade, as great as Diggs has been over the years, the end of his season last year, he didn't produce very much, and his analytics were way down. So how does he fit with a team that already has some pretty good targets? We didn't even mention Robert Woods, who's in the mix as well.
Yeah, I think what happens is because of Robert Woods' numbers being as low as they are, you add Stephon Diggs, which brings up the overall average of these numbers when you're talking about your receivers. But it also, you know, the common theme with, and you mentioned it a little bit, Willie, the common theme with all of these teams, these four teams in AFC South, and this is why I think people are so leaning heavy on Houston, a lot of this is predicated on how accurate your quarterback is. And it seems like C.J. Stroud was way more accurate
than
the other
guys.
Three quarterbacks. Yep. And he elevated the catchable balls, putting it in the right space, reading defenses, putting it in that zone. It could be the structure of the offensive scheme as well, getting guys open, getting catchable balls, finding holes in the zone. That's why you look at, you know, why some teams are so successful in their pass in their passing game. It's because the quarterback is accurate, and then the offense is set up, or the scheme is set up to get people open, to find holes. And it's not hard to get somebody open. That's why it seems like you look at Houston, but then you look at the other three teams that are in there, in their conference or division. Houston is superior to Tennessee, Jacksonville, and Indianapolis when it comes to their passing game. And everything, all of that is because of their quarterback is a lot more accurate. And it seems like their offense flows a lot better than these other offenses. Now, again, Tennessee is a little, it may be a little bit different because you have two guys coming from different areas. Calvin Ridley, Jacksonville last year, Tyler Boyd, Cincinnati last year. So that's why the numbers could be a little bit different, but we want to see all three of these guys, plus Nick Weissel-Burkina and Treylon Burks, in this offense next year. Will it turn into Houston, meaning the quarterback being more accurate, putting balls where he needs to put them, and making these opportunities catchable opportunities for these players?
I think this is going to create also, from a fantasy standpoint, when you draft your team, you've got a lot of unknowns, because I think it always helps when you're like, okay, Travis Kelce, I know what Travis Kelce has done. Mm-hmm. He's had the same quarterback throwing to him for years. I know what I'm getting, as long as he's not aging out. When you have a new quarterback or a new coach, a new receiver on a different team, it creates a little bit of wonder how it's going to work out. I'm fascinated by how Diggs, because we just talked about how Stroud, regardless of who he's throwing to, because remember Collins got hurt, Tank Dell got hurt, but he was still finding ways. Yeah. Whoever came in there was doing well. Noah Brown, I don't think I'd ever heard of Noah Brown last year. He had some good games. He was efficient in the games that he got the ball thrown to him. So you have Diggs, who was disgruntled with the Bills. It's a different type of offense, and it was a unique set of circumstances on what they did, right? They didn't commit to Diggs for the next 5 years or whatever. No. This is like put up or shut up time for him. But I wonder how that relationship is going to go, because if the Texans can do anything close to what they did last year in the passing game, it's a fair question to ask. Did they even need Diggs?
Yeah. You know, if they didn't have him, I think people would still believe that the Houston Texans and C.J. Stroud is the team to beat in the AFC South. And they are one of the teams to beat in the AFC in general. That's even without Stephon Diggs. You add Stephon Diggs to the mix, now it goes up even more. But it's all predicated on how well the quarterback adjusts, or how well Stephon Diggs adjusts to the quarterback in the scheme and what they're asking him to do. And how does the quarterback continue to improve within this offense? Because, again, all of these guys, it's not a coincidence that all of their numbers, take away Stephon Diggs, that all of their numbers, with the exception of Robert Woods, their numbers are high. And even Robert Woods, his numbers, they were, I'm sure they are higher than what they were last year here in Nashville. And again, all of that is because of the quarterback. And that's where you add a Calvin Ridley, you add a Tyler Boyd, you bring in a Brian Callahan with that offense. You hope then that you're able to get easier throws. You know, Will Levis has maturity. He understands, you know, leverages with defense. He understands, you know, seeing a hole before it's actually there. So he can put the ball on the receiver, which makes catchable ball. He's not throwing off his back foot, or he's not throwing balls over a receiver's head or trying to fit him in tight holes. No, he knows the offense. He's figured it out. And you will see those numbers with Boyd, not necessarily Boyd because his numbers are a little bit higher. Ridley, D-Hop, guys like that, numbers should go up. But it's all predicated on two things. The quarterback being more accurate within this system, and then the system allowing the system has to get these guys open. I'm gonna say it again: the system has to get these guys open, people, because they are getting a little bit older. The foot speed is not quite there anymore, so this system has to get these guys open, and then the quarterback has to do his job at putting it on them, being accurate. And if that happens, which is a big if that happens, these numbers with these guys, I think it will go up.
One more team I want to get your take on in the AFC, because I think it's pretty crazy. We've talked about Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs changing addresses. That means that the Bills are going to have a completely different look at wide receiver. So they have Curtis Samuel, who was targeted 75 or more times last year from Washington. Khalil Shakir, who was a guy that was very good for the Bills in limited duty, so you feel like he's going to get maybe a bigger piece of the action. And then Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who's been playing with the Chiefs. So that is a wild card group right there for the Bills. What does that passing attack look like?
On face value, it doesn't look good.
I would agree.
It doesn't look good. They went from having one of the, you know, I would say a top 12 duo. And I know Stephon Diggs is a stud, but Gabe Davis and everybody else, so it starts to diminish a little bit. He can only hold it for so long, that number. So they went from having a good receiving core to a huge question mark with this receiving core.
And then you talked about how the quarterback impacts a lot of these guys' numbers. Think about the Jets guys for a second.
Woo.
Like, I think we all agree Garrett Wilson is a really good wide receiver. His numbers were awful last year in terms of where he ranked. They threw him the ball a lot, but he was 56, 54, 56, 52. That's not Garrett Wilson, right?
No.
That's not on him. That's just the fact that the Jets had a bad offensive line, a bad quarterback situation, and it affected his numbers.
I could just imagine some of them passes. If you had to sit down and watch the film
and say, was that catchable?
It's like, man, goodness, that definitely was catchable. But then on the flip side, look at, you know, you look at the Miami Dolphins. And as bad as, you know, people don't consider Tua, some people don't consider Tua a good quarterback. I think Tua's a damn good quarterback. I think, you know, he's one of the top, he's the top 15 quarterback in his in this league.
Yeah. But Hill and Waddle definitely.
But you look at their numbers.
Yeah.
Why is their numbers this way? Why? Because he's accurate. The quarterback is accurate. He anticipates just as good as any quarterback in the National Football League. Does he have the best arm strength? Probably not. But what they're asking him to do, it, he's efficient and proficient in what they're asking him to do. And that, in turn, sort of bleeds into these numbers with Tyreek Hill and Jason Waddle. Jalen Waddle, excuse me.
And now they've added Odell Beckham
Beckham
in the Dolphins. So that's intriguing about them. So just some tidbits there about the AFC wide receiver picture there. So when we come back, we'll have our final segment, and we'll switch gears and set the table for what's going on in the NHL playoffs and the latest rumors surrounding the Predators and their big offseason that's coming. They made the big trade last week of Ryan McDonagh. So what are some of the things that are out there on the horizon? Options to try to upgrade. Also, Milwaukee has advanced. The Admirals, a dramatic 5-game series win over Grand Rapids. So they're back in the Final Four for the second year in a row. So what does that mean for the prospects of next year? Trying, you know, for Barry Trotz, who's ready to come in and help the club? We'll talk about it next here on 102.5 The Game. Oh, yeah, we're going with the classics today. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 and up in Tennessee to bet. And Nashville's best deal this week is Beach Bend Park at Splash Lagoon. That's the water park. Go to thegamenashville.com/deals for a buy one, get one free admission for just $44.99. $44.99, that is. Beach Bend Park.
Take it Willie, off. don't you know how, just think about this, how much of an uproar this world was in 1999 as it was winding down. Like, everybody just thought everything, the world was going to crash, the stock market was going to crash, computers were just going to go haywire, and we were going to go back to the dark ages.
I remember that.
That's what people thought.
The hysterica that was going on. Hysteria, I should say, that was going on was every day. Every day.
Exactly. The closer we got.
I remember, the clock hit midnight. We're all kind of like, anything going to happen? Look at the TVs on. Anything going on? Remember SportsCenter had the crazy commercial? ESPN used to do those SportsCenter commercials of we're doing the run-through. And everybody started running, going crazy, and like Charlie Steiner was running, follow me to freedom! follow me to freedom!
It's like, man, what were we thinking? I guess we thought everything would just go shut down.
Yeah, all that computer stuff that I didn't understand, but I guess we figured it out.
Yeah, I guess they figured it out.
Anybody run into the grocery store at that time?
Oh, yeah, people doing crazy stuff, building bunkers and everything else. It was just wild, I don't know. As a kid, I wasn't a kid, but as a young adult, my daughter was just born,
You think your football career was over when you heard you?
I thought everything was going to just that's it, 1999, man. Your computer's going to cut off, and you better, put your money under your mattress, because all your money was going to be gone. So, there you go. And look at where we're at now.
Yep, somehow we survived.
Somehow we survived.
Okay, so update on the Predators. First, congratulations to the Milwaukee Admirals who were able to pull out the 5-game series. The development, if you didn't see it over the weekend, is in game four after Yaroslav Askarov. Remember, he didn't play game one because he was benched for the last 3 games of the first round. Got a chance to come back in there and responded well. Got a big win in game two. Mm-hmm. Got an even bigger win on the road in game three. He was one of the 3 stars of the game in both of those. Then in game four, Nashville, Milwaukee had a 2-0 lead, and Grand Rapids came roaring back and won. During that time, Askarov left the game briefly, injured, came back in, but clearly wasn't right, and they got barraged. It ended up, I think, 4-2 or something like that, and Askarov did not dress in game 5. So he's got an injury issue. Don't know the specifics. You know how they are in hockey. Mm-hmm. They don't tell you what's going on. So we don't know about his availability in the Final Four. So that's one big storyline. The other big one to me is that Zach LaRue continues, a first-round pick from 2021, who is still only 21 years of age, is having a great postseason for the Admirals. So this is part of what Barry Trotz has to kind of look ahead, is what kind of space do I leave on my roster for somebody like a LaRue, or maybe it's Juuso Parsonen, who's been playing on the same line with LaRue and having big-time production. Parsonen, remember, they put him in for Game 6 of the Canucks series. Like, they believed in him enough to give him a shot. So he should not be written off. Then there's Tomasino. There's Joachim Kimmel. That is what I'm really curious to see. How many free agents or trades does he try to make? And how much does he say, we got to leave a spot here because I think these guys might be ready? That's a tough call.
Yeah, I'm sure it is a tough call for a GM trying to, as you try to continue to upgrade your roster, I guess the most ideal way would be to do everything from the minor leagues. Like, you've grown out of the minor leagues, now you're ready for the NHL. I'm sure that's how GMs would like the sort of the road to be.
Yeah, like it's much easier if you get the production for guys that are young and you've developed and you don't have to pay them that much. That leaves you more for other
more
guys.
Room. So I'm sure, you know, where the, you know, Barry and whoever else, you know, the powers that be, they're trying to figure out, you know, the balance of individuals we could potentially bring up and then individuals we can target in free agency. Obviously, we know that this team, I think this year, and I said this about the Tennessee Titans before the season even started last year, we were talking about, you know, expectations and everything else and roster building. And I said this off season will be one of the most important off seasons because it set the stage for what for year, you know, three or four of your tenure, we're moving in that stadium. So we got to get this roster, you know, set and ready to go. And I think that's sort of Barry thing is too. It's like, listen, we're not talking about a stadium here, but yeah, we got to build this roster. We got to build this roster back up. We got to make sure that this off season we find us a guy that can help tilt the scale for us, whether it be one guy or two guys this off season.
How many times did we say over the years in regards to the Titans? Remember when the Titans were going from being a really bad team
to a good
team, to a 9-7 team? Mm-hmm. That's hard enough. But then the next step of going from a 9-7 to a championship contender, that's even
the hard
tougher.
Part. Yeah.
So I think Barry Trotz has done a wonderful job of getting the team back on board, mm-hmm. right? And they did it without mortgaging the future or anything. They've got a lot of assets lined up. But now, how do you go from being a good team to a team that can win playoff mm-hmm. rounds? They've got some really tricky decisions to make. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of options on how they do it and good options. But what moves they make are going to be really something. And that brings me to something else that came up over the weekend. Is Pierre LeBrun cited a situation? You've got Carolina, who has been one of the most consistent winning teams in the NHL for the last 6 years. But they haven't been able to get to the Stanley Cup final. They've won a bunch of playoff rounds. They're almost a shoe-in to win the first round every year. But they haven't been able to get over the top. And they've got a number of players who are at the end of their contracts. They're also kind of a different animal when it comes to making moves. They're not afraid to be a little cutthroat. Their GM has stepped down, so that's a wild card. And there's one player on their roster that Pierre LeBrun talked about over the weekend, and that is Marty Natchez, who is still 25 years of age. He doesn't turn 26 until January. He's already had a 25-goal season, a 28-goal season. He's been productive, but he's left a little bit to be desired. They think he's maybe disappeared a little bit in the playoffs. Does that sound familiar? And the coaches seem to get a little frustrated with him at times. But he's a talent. He's a restricted free agent, and they've got other guys they want to sign. So Pierre LeBrun says, for the right price, Carolina might be interested in trading Natchez, and he mentions the Predators as a team that has all of the things that we've been talking about, mm-hmm. draft picks and prospects and cap space to try to make an offer for Natchez. So that's a name to maybe keep in the back of your mind in the coming weeks here. And the thing I like about Natchez is that he is a speedster. He's a rush player. What have we said about Andrew Brunette? He would like to add a little speed element to the team. So I'm intrigued about that. But then you got to ask me, well, what are you going to give up?
Yeah.
That's
what
the question.
It cost?
I don't know. Because
what is the cost?
Because how many teams are going to make an offer for Natchez if they've decided they're going to move on from him?
Well,
I don't know.
Sure.
If there's only two teams calling you, mm-hmm. then maybe you can get away with not giving up the farm for somebody like Natchez.
Do you think you could maybe give him up the farm?
No, I don't. I don't think so.
Prospects that you would have to give up.
I think if you packaged, this is what you know. Nick actually asked me this during the break. They have so many picks mm-hmm. that I don't think it would be anything to take a second and a third, put it with a prospect. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, throw Tomasino's name in there. Maybe somebody else is of interest. Now, remember, the Carolina is not a rebuilding situation, right? They're trying to still win. So just like we talk about with Soros, hey, you can offer me all the draft picks that you want. I'm not that interested. I'm trying to win right now. If I'm going to trade you a guy like Soros, I want something secure in return, and that's where you run up against it with Carolina. The difference is the Predators don't have to trade Soros. Natchez is a restricted free agent. They have to offer him a qualifying offer, but they've got to make a new deal with him. He is a free agent, so he's unsigned going forward. They have to address it. So maybe you can get him a little less if that's out there. So I'm a little concerned about his makeup and what people say, but he just tore it up in the World Championships, Nate just did. The Czech Republic won. They beat Roman Josi's Swiss team for the gold medal, and he did really well. He still maybe got another level to his game. If you could get him, maybe you could pay him, you know, not in the $8 million range and have that $5 or $6 million forward for the next several years. It's an intriguing one to me. I've been trying to do my homework on him, ask around. Adam Vingan's going to join us later in the week to talk about some of the numbers on Natchez. He's intriguing, though. At first, I was like, you'd have to trade for him. I don't know. But looking a little deeper, I do think this is something that they might, you know, take a closer look at, because he's in that 25, 26-year-old range. He's got a pretty high floor, and if you could get him to another level in an Andrew Brunette system, you could have a chance to hit it big. I think he could be a big upgrade for what they've got. What would it take to get him? I don't know.
Well, we'll see if down that road. But we won't know until, July 1st?
That's right.
That's when everything starts to happen.
Just keep that on your radar of things to keep your eye on. And with Jared coming up next, just a quick note, Carl Taylor is still the coach.
Is he?
He's still the coach of the Admirals.
Didn't fire him?
Barry Trotz didn't fire him.
Oh, damn. I thought Barry was going to fire him after what Stillman said.
Oh, yeah. After not playing a scar off, they've advanced another round. Carl Taylor's a pretty good coach. Harry Trotz didn't fire.
Guess he kept his job.
Yeah. That's what he got. I know Jared will be.
That's what happens when you win. Keep your job.
Yeah, keep your job.
No matter what.
In all seriousness, I do wonder if a scar off will be available. It's a best of seven with Coachella Valley. It's a remade match of last year's Western Conference Finals. So we'll see what happens.
This is his first, injury, sort of, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that's all for us. Caroline will be back with us tomorrow. Stillman and Company coming up next. Stay tuned.
Be love. Love on your people. Happy Tuesday and peace.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.